Good morning and welcome to the Business Standard Morning Show. I'm Nazia Iqbal and here's a look at the stories for the day. As the economic activity shifted online, a dark industry of sophisticated hackers mushroomed around it. And as the nations and companies ramped up security to save their data, fraudsters too shifted the gears. It is an ongoing battle in which corporates are bleeding and hackers flourishing. On Wednesday morning, flight operations of SpiceJet were hit after what it called an attempted ransomware attack. At least 7 out of 10 Indian companies suffered from a ransomware attack last year. So what can India Inc. do to combat this threat? Let's see in our report.
Hundreds of flyers spent restless hours at Indian airports on Wednesday morning after aircraft of SpiceJet came to a standstill. Some took to social media platforms to register their ordeal, claiming that they were stranded for hours without a word from the private airline. SpiceJet came out with a clarification later and said that it had faced an attempted ransomware attack. It also said that services were resumed in a few hours after its IT team contained the situation, but not before it gave SpiceJet brass some really scary moments. One of the tweets written in response to SpiceJet's announcement highlighted most firms' stand on cybersecurity, that it is defensive rather than being preemptive. Ransomware is a malicious software that blocks access to a computer system. The hacker gives access or the decryption key in lieu of money. In April, Oil India reportedly suffered a cyber attack that disrupted its operations in Assam. The PSU major had also received a ransom demand of over $7,500,000 from the hackers, who had asked for the equivalent amount in bitcoins. In the subsequent police complaint, an oil official said that the company and the government exchequer had incurred a huge financial loss due to the ransomware, and this seems to be the tip of the iceberg. Cybersecurity firm Sophos said in a recent report that around 78% of Indian organizations that were surveyed had been hit by ransomware in 2021. The survey examined the impact of ransomware on 5,600 mid-sized organizations in 31 countries. This included 300 organizations from India, and it found that in 2021, 78% of Indian organizations that had their data encrypted due to ransomware ended up paying the ransom. This was the highest rate of ransom payment reported across all 31 countries surveyed. According to the survey, 48% of Indian companies paid less than $5,000 as ransom in response to ransomware attacks. Meanwhile, 10% paid $1 million or more. In fact, 3 companies in the survey admitted to paying a ransom of $10 million or more to hackers to get their data back. According to research from Unit 42 by Palo Alto Networks, ransomware payments hit new records in 2021. India saw a 218% jump in ransomware attacks in 2021. The 2022 Unit 42 ransomware threat report found that India ranks 10th globally with regard to the number of ransomware attacks. In fact, the country ranks 2nd in the Japan and Asia-Pacific region. India Inc. is well aware of the threat environment it is operating in. According to a survey by PwC, around 80% of Indian organizations are likely to increase their cybersecurity budget in 2022. According to Gartner, a technological research and consulting firm based in the US, end-user spending on security and risk management in India is forecast to touch $2.6 billion in 2022, which would amount to an increase of 9.5% 7.4% from 2021. Gartner's research has found that there is a significant shortage of skilled cybersecurity professionals in the country. As a result, end-user organizations in India often go to security service providers to meet their cybersecurity objectives. Therefore, spending on security services is forecast to be $1 billion in 2022, which is the highest among all segments. This will be followed by spending on network security equipment and infrastructure protection.
While organizations have embedded cyber solutions, right from identifying the threats, secure applications, focusing on third-party and supply chain risk, going and planning towards a zero trust approach is what is very imperative for organizations to go towards, which essentially means limiting the impact of a cybersecurity threat within a specific function, within a specific unit. What the essence of this entire thing is that right from network to infrastructure to application, you are verified and authorized to access only the elements at specific points in time, at any given point in time. So that's the essence of a zero trust module. And this honestly is picking up only this is a new concept that has come probably about 2-3 years, not long ago than 2-3 years. And, it has picked up in the recent parts, given the whole advent of virtualization and cloud adoption, where organizations are still trying to manage both on-prem and cloud networks and, try to bring everything together, but ensuring, the right access and the right people have the right access at the right levels. Right. When it comes to the human element, no matter what amount of cyber awareness trainings that we give, it has to be embedded to a point where it becomes a muscle memory, and you see more and more responses and recognition from your employees to report such incidents, and that should absolutely begin at the very top, right from executives and board level to the analyst, as well as to the lower level of your first line of defense, right? The third thing when it comes, the whole processes and governance, right from, establishing a culture of, simulating exercise, knowing how to respond, what decision to make, who to involve, all those things, they come into picture when you do a simulation exercise, which involves, red teaming, blue teaming, purple teaming, as well as board simulation, so that everyone knows that role. When such an incident happens, right? And putting a governance overall in place goes a long way, right? To a large extent, certain directives which have come off recently, only last month, are expecting organizations to identify, report, and manage such incidents in a very short time frame.
India Inc. is going to become an even more target-rich environment for malicious actors, owing to the digital leap many firms took due to the pandemic. At the end of the day, a certain percentage of attacks will always slip through, which would still be a large number given the sheer volume of such attacks India faces. As such, it's worth asking, should Indian companies continue their habit of caving in to ransomware attacks? Isn't that only going to embolden the malicious actors of the world?
India's central bank too has been taking preventive steps to safeguard crucial consumer data. Last year, it directed merchants not to store consumer card details on their servers starting January 1, 2022. Unique tokens were supposed to replace the card details, a process referred to as tokenization. But it was easier said than done. After the industry cried foul, the implementation date was pushed to June 30. It is drawing close now. So, is India ready for this big payment system reform this time? Let's find out in our next report.
Last week, Apple informed its customers in India that it will no longer store their card information on file and will not be accepting payments made by debit cards and credit cards for purchases or subscriptions on the App Store or other Apple services in light of the upcoming RBI regulations. It will still be accepting payments through UPI. The decision of the US giant surprised many, but not those who are scrambling to meet the RBI deadline on tokenization of cards, which is June 30, 2022. Come July 1, merchants, payment aggregators, payment gateways, and acquiring banks can no longer store the card details of customers. Only card issuing banks and card networks can store the actual card data. With businesses still reeling with the disruption caused by RBI's rules for card-based recurring payments that came into effect January 1st this year, another storm is brewing for them. Businesses and other entities that have stored any such data will have to purge them and apply tokenization. Tokenization is a replacement of card number with an alternative code called the token. Once created, the tokenized card details will be used in place of the actual card number for online purchases initiated or instructed by the cardholder. A tokenized card transaction is considered safer as the actual card details are not shared with the merchant during transaction processing. It will cut the chances of card information leakage. For transaction tracking and reconciliation purposes, entities can store the last four digits of card number and card issuer's name. The customer's consent and OTP-based authentication is required for creating a token. A customer can, however, still choose not to tokenize his or her card. In such a case, customers will have to enter complete card details every time they make a payment. This could lead to a decline in revenues for merchants as a significant number of conversions happen through saved cards. The first RBI deadline to tokenize card details was June 30, 2021. But at the request of merchants and payment aggregators, as well as card companies and banks, it was extended to December 31, 2021, and the deadline was again extended by 6 months. Earlier this month, Paytm said it had tokenized 2.8 crore cards across Visa, MasterCard and RuPay, accounting for 80% of monthly active cards on the app. Other businesses are also nudging users to tokenize their cards in order to enjoy a seamless experience from July 1st. For instance, every time a user opens the Swiggy app, he is greeted with a message at the bottom of the screen to secure his cards before June 30. PayU, RazorPay, PhonePe, Worldline and Pine Labs are among the companies that have come up with tokenization solutions to help businesses transition to the new framework. Kilan Haria, VP and Head of Payments Product at RazorPay, told Business Standard that Visa, MasterCard, RuPay and Diners Club have gone live on its tokenization platform, with American Express expected to go live soon. However, it is not just card networks, but card issuing banks too have to come on board. With just about 5 weeks to go, where does the payments ecosystem stand in terms of its preparedness?
I think with the extension and now with June happening, I think there is a lot more certainty. So we do not expect any large scale disruption. I think edge cases are what are being worked upon today, and we are closely partnering with all the networks. And I think some of the issuers as well. So 100% of the RazorPay merchants are live on the tokenization solution. Is the way we had inherently built the entire stack, which was the pre-tokenization stack, which essentially meant that RazorPay checkout had to kind of integrate with the tokenization suite that we exposed. So for 99% merchants, the work was zero. For the remaining 1% merchants, which prefer to customize and build their own checkout and have PCI compliance, these are the merchants who need to do the heavy lifting at their end. I think we have full confidence for the mature networks, which have already battle tested it, that will hold the scale. RazorPay's offering, which directly connects to the network, supports, I think, upward of 10,000 transactions per second. So it supports more than the peak of, India's digital payments that we see today on the acquiring side. I think RuPay is, of course, new, but all the early signs and the deep dive we've done with RuPay gives us the confidence that this should also be, pretty smooth journey on the scale side. Issuing banks have to provide a portal to end customers to be able to, see and manage their cards. And second aspect is issuing banks are also allowed to become a tokenized solution by themselves and save some of these cards. So RazorPay has been working with issuing banks on both the solutions. The first one where they need to provide a portal, I think, is a regulatory mandate. And we've been enabling issuing banks to be compliant with that mandate. I think the progress that we are hearing is pretty promising. I think okay. we will see majority of the banks being ready on the portal and the view and the management. Because even if few banks are not ready in the edge case scenario, right? This still takes the security one level higher, where at least it's now stored with a fewer set of parties.
Meanwhile, a lack of compliance by banks with RBI's rules on recurring payments is already leading to a large number of recurring transaction failures. RazorPay's Kilan Haria said it would take about 6 to 9 more months for reaching the stabilization phase where coverage would be near complete. Several banks are yet to integrate with mandate hubs like Builders, SciHub, or RazorPay's Mandate HQ, affecting publishers, B2B SaaS companies, and small businesses and startups that majorly depend on subscriptions for revenue. While recurring payments still make up only a minor portion of overall payments, the magnitude of the impact from card tokenization will be enormous, affecting merchants of all sizes, including major e-commerce companies and food delivery firms. The Merchants Payments Alliance of India, whose members include Netflix, BookMyShow, Disney Plus Hotstar, Microsoft and Zoom, said it observed that requisite backend infrastructure isn't ready. It said that unless the backend infrastructure for processing payments using tokens is ready by June 30th, data purging by merchants and payment aggregators would lead to a breakdown in settlements, reconciliation, and services such as refunds, cashbacks, and chargebacks. The alliance said that data purging without demonstrated ecosystem readiness at scale across use cases would give rise to business continuity challenges for merchants of all sizes.
From a merchant perspective, we have limited visibility and information on the state of readiness of the payments ecosystem as a whole, which includes, of course, at the base layer, the card schemes and then the banks and payment aggregators. We, as on date, don't have final APIs from our service partners. And therefore, there is no real way for us to tell you what level of readiness payments partners, whether they're aggregators or card schemes or banks, are at currently. This is fairly similar to the situation that you saw last year around subscription payments, where until the last day, people said that there is no real issue. We are meant to purge card data in time for the deadline as well. And therefore, there's a real risk that there is immense amounts of service disruption and an erosion, therefore, of consumer welfare. Unless there is a sort of a reality check within the entire ecosystem, there are at least two steps involved. One is for tokens to be generated, and the second is for the tokens to be processed. So we are at a point where token generation has been achieved by quite a few of our payments entities. However, token processing is actually being able to reconcile the token with a transaction and also test it against use cases, like I said, chargebacks, EMIs, etc. All of those things is still to be done.
With some banks, particularly smaller ones, not expected to be compliant with the regulations from day one, customers can expect some friction while making payments online. The transition to the new payments regime will certainly not be smooth. Merchants and consumers are going to face problems. The next 5 weeks are crucial in this transition. Banks and other players of the payments ecosystem will have to work in tandem to ensure that everything falls in line.
Experts believe that initial few months will be bumpy in India's transition to tokenization. Meanwhile, Indian markets have outperformed even in the recent correction as flows from mutual funds and retail investors have remained robust. Our next story takes a dive into how retail investors are looking at macroeconomic developments and can their flows into the equities shrink going forward.
At a time when foreign investors have been on a selling spree across most emerging markets, including India, flows from mutual funds via the systematic investment plan route and directly into equities by retail investors have supported the markets. However, according to analysts, the headwinds, inflation, rising interest rates, and an upturn in the real estate cycle may dent flows into equities as an asset class going ahead. According to Jefferies, a record over $60 billion retail inflow through mutual funds and direct into domestic equity over the last 12 months has helped absorb heavy foreign selling. But they believe retail inflows cannot be taken for granted. As trailing one-year returns drop towards zero in another 3 to 4 weeks, the pace of retail inflows can reduce. History shows that a sustained property market boom and higher market volatility can also impact flows, says Mahesh Nandarkar of Jefferies. FPIs so far this year sold securities worth $22 billion. However, this has been met by a similar $23 billion purchase by DIIs. Data shows that the domestic participation has broadened over the last 12 months, with mutual funds, retail, equity, folio account, and SIP accounts up by 29% and 42% respectively. Retail investors are also turning to direct stock purchases. The number of DMAT accounts has gone up 63% year-on-year. Brokerage Jefferies estimates an inflow of $36 billion directly into stocks from retail investors over the last 2 years. Thus far in calendar year 2022,
the S&P BSE Sensex and the Nifty 50 have slipped around 7% each. The fall has been less as compared to their global peers such as DJIAA, NASDAQ, S&P 500, Kospi, Hang Seng, Shanghai Composite, CAC 40 and DAX, which have lost 12% to 28% during this period. This outperformance of the Indian markets, even in the correction phase, was possible due to strong participation in equities by retail and mutual funds, analysts said. Besides Jefferies, Jigar Shah of MIB Securities India 2 believes that the retail participation could shrink going ahead as the RBI hikes rates and more investment avenues open up as interest rates go up.
What I feel is that so far the April data which has come out for mutual funds does not really suggest any major change in the behavior of the investors, especially the equity inflow which is taking place through the SIP is very, very strong. Having said that, it would be very interesting to see the May and June data, because in the June 1st or 2nd week, we will have another policy decision. And possibly around that time, market could crack quite sharply. So at that point of time, we will see how is the behavior of the investors. And at the same time, we would also see increase in the interest rate, which would enable investors an avenue which was not there till now. Therefore, there could be also a swing into the debt mutual funds or the fixed income products, fixed deposits, bonds. That itself could lead to another outflow, which can hurt the equity markets. So we'll have to see these 2 months and the data, how the investors respond to that.
Over the past decade, strong retail inflows have coincided with declining or low deposit rates, according to analysts at Jefferies, who expect the deposit rates to go above the 7% level with a lag even if the RBI were to hike rates. Low property price inflation over the past decade has supported strong equity inflows. Property prices have started rising now and there is room for property market upturn, says Mahesh Nandarkar of Jefferies. Nandarkar adds the current surge in housing demand is end-user driven, but a sustained upturn will likely pull in property investors as well. This could negatively impact equity flows, he says. On Thursday, the markets are likely to remain choppy in a range ahead of the F&O expiry for May series. Stock-specific action, however, will continue.
In the ongoing choppy market, knowing entry and exit points may turn fortunes in your favor. They are the most crucial factors for a successful trade. Our next report highlights a few easy trading strategies to identify entry and exit points.
It is like catching a train which doesn't halt at a railway station. The only discount that it offers to commuters is that it slows down. But how slow is too slow? While some hop on at a given speed, others wait for a slower pace to charge. But it may or may not slow down. Only an experienced commuter can tell when to board or when to jump and deboard without bruising knees. Entry and exit points in stock markets are just like that. Select technical indicators such as moving averages, time frames, breakouts, etc. help investors in identifying such points. The first technical indicator that investors can easily use as an entry point is a technical breakout. This can be a profitable entry point for investors if the trend is studied accurately. This could be identified using charts and candlestick patterns. However, it is important to eliminate the noise and wait for the price to settle after the breakout. If the breakout is backed by an extraordinary surge in volume, then traders and investors should wait for the price to show corrective moves. Among these, a trend line breakout is one of the popular ones. As seen in the HUL chart, a trend line breakout accompanied with strong volume confirms a major positive upside that can provide over 10% movement in a short span of time. Similarly, the chart of Cummins India stock shows that the entry point, in terms of moving averages crossover, can be identified in candlestick patterns such as Marubozo and Morningstar, etc. In order to confirm a trend before entering a trade, one should correlate the same with time frames. For example, It is always wise to look at the daily chart and then at the weekly chart if someone is looking for an intraday entry. For a buy side trade, an investor can consider entering if the daily and weekly charts have positive signals. Just like entry points, charts can also help in determining indicative targets for exit points. Price targets tend to be the difference between neckline and the low of the pattern. For targeting higher gains, one can deploy a trailing stop loss strategy. That apart, one should be ready to exit the trade when a particular stock or an index starts witnessing selling pressure above a particular price or range.
Nowadays, several technical analysis software come with inbuilt strategies and models that one can use while trading. However, one of the best ways to be profitable in trading is to develop your unique trading model that has a higher accuracy rate. Well, that's all we have for you today. We will be back with more news and analysis in our next episode. Stay tuned. Thank you for watching.
For more news, views and updates, subscribe to Business Standard on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast and Spotify. Also follow us on YouTube, Vimeo, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn.